And croeso to episode 119 of Alternative Wales, the podcast. Back in the hot seat this week to talk all the latest goings on in Welsh football is your friend and mine, Tommy Cowes. How are you, Cowes?
Yeah, feeling spooktacular today, right?
Yeah. All Halloweened up to the max.
Yeah, absolutely. As you know, I've been cultivating a nice moustache for the last 6 weeks, ready for today to scare people. So,
Who are you going as?
Just me. Yeah, just me.
Yeah.
But the very worst version of me.
I think I've seen a glimpse into that, and that is a frightening thing. Alongside Tommy Cowes is the not so frightening, brilliant Megan Faringer. Megan, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I lack a mustache, but
good.
Yeah, I can't offer anything other than that. I don't have a mustache.
Well, there we are. That is the sort of content you get with Alternative Wales. Don't really know where else to go with that, so I guess we'll just go straight into the football. Let's start on Friday night with Wales women, talking about frightening. Just to say, we are recording this before Wales play Denmark, so we can't really chat too much about that yet, obviously, because it hasn't happened at the time of recording. But if Friday's anything to go by, expectations are quite low. Megan, it was another 5-1 defeat, consecutive 5-1 defeat, another flurry of goals late on. I know it's against one of the so-called giants of women's international football, but it is a really concerning result, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think you can sugarcoat it in any possible way. Because like after the Denmark game, all of the sort of conversation coming out of the Wales camp was, well, we've got to shore up defense. We've got to get back to the fundamentals. We got to do the basics right. And, you know, one of the first lessons that I learned when I started sort of watching football and getting into it was that you just do not concede late. Like that's a sort of a big thing. And to have three goals conceded between the 80th minute and the 88th minute is, I mean, that's frankly absurd. And it just shows like a defensive capitulation. But there's a lot of talking points to come out of this match. But I think the biggest one is just the sort of like the lack of subs, like the total lack of wanting to substitute, despite the fact that Wales looked tired. They looked exhausted. She was sticking with the same 11 that we're going to have to play against Denmark. And these girls were getting beat up. I mean, you're having wave after wave of German attack, and it's the same 11 out on that pitch. And I'm not surprised at all that Wales went and conceded three goals in the space of 8 minutes in the end, because like that is just what happens in exhaustion. Sophie Ingle concedes a penalty and then two more goals arrive after that. So it was really, really poor from Wales. I expected more. But at the same time, this is kind of following a trend in the Nations League campaign. And I think that's what's so worrying.
Yeah, it feels like we could probably just copy and paste our chat from last month and just pop it in this spot, because it's the same concerns, it's the same issues that are cropping up again. Obviously, you know, it goes without saying that the goal Wales scored was unbelievable. What a great team goal. But that doesn't paper over the cracks. You know, you can't lose 5-1. Unfortunately, you don't get multiple goals awarded for how well your goal is, as much as we've spoken about that in the past.
Yeah. And a lot of people were upset about like the manner of the defeat and stuff. But yeah, and comparing it to the France game. And for me, like that was always sort of a reflective point. I'd always go back to that France game, because I guess also in hindsight, it feels like that was just a really good positive performance. I've gone back to that game and sort of looked at the stats. Wales had 29% possession. So they played them twice. So 31% possession when they lost 2-0. Jess Fischlock hit the crossbar like really late on, and then their second goal like really late on. So they had Wales had 31% possession. They had 6 shots versus France's 13, 2 corners versus 9, and Wales had 234 passes versus 483 passes. So like Wales were still definitely like, you know, they were the ones soaking up the pressure. France were more dominant. Go to Germany. In Germany, Wales had 31% possession, same thing. Wales had 4 shots, but Germany had 35 shots. They had 20 corners to Wales's 1. So Wales still had 235 passes which is more than they had against France, but it's the number of shots that fit that Wales allowed on their goal. Like, you can't allow 35 shots and 20 corners and not expect to get absolutely pummeled by the end of that. Like, that's what's so concerning. I think that's where the France game, like, when I look back on that, just sort of the vibe around it, the emotions around it, what I felt, it felt like Wales were still managing to be really strong and push France and make it difficult for them while also offering something on the counter. Whereas against Germany, it was like Wales were just really accepting in terms of, yes, we're just going to let them attack us and we're just going to like basically sit in a super, super low block and just hope for the best.
I mean, first of all, mad stats, but also second of all, it's just nice to see someone do research coming into the podcast, reading off those stats. But yeah, it's a real bad indictment on the way the team has been coached and managed and set up in the last 18 months, I think, since that France game, isn't it?
Yeah, November 2021 was when that France game was. And again, like, there has to be the caveat that France and Germany are huge giants, like you said. I mean, these are teams that qualified for the World Cup without even really lifting a finger. The fact Germany crashed out of the group stages this summer was a shock to everyone. And this was also Germany without Alex Popp. Like, imagine if Alex Popp had been in this German squad against Wales on Friday, and this could have been, you know, 45 shots, 50 shots against Wales's defense. But like, when you go and look at Wales versus Iceland, Wales actually have more possession. They have 62% possession. They have 12 shots to Iceland's 9. You know, they technically were unlucky to concede such an early goal against Iceland and not be able to score, which has also been a theme throughout this campaign, is that Wales have struggled to score. But I do see where Gemma Granger sort of has this argument, like, well, we're learning a lot from playing against these incredibly good teams, and then we're applying those lessons to maybe teams that are more on our level. But when you go play these big teams, it actually looks like Wales have regressed from where they were 18 months ago. And then you have to wonder, well, are you learning your lessons? And just from the conversation around subs, it just does not look like Wales have learned their lessons at all. Like, the subs have been a sticking point for me since Gemma Granger has come in. And once again, that's what happened. And yeah, I think I was messaging you on Friday in all caps, very angry about like the lack of subs.
Just going to say, that's a key point from my perspective, who, you know, I watch less of the national women's team than you two do, but it does feel as if the national team has regressed massively in recent times. You know, from like very close, being so close to qualifying for tournaments, to now, I mean, just miles off the pace when it comes to playing the better sides. And you mentioned there, Megan, as well, you know, 35 shots. Sometimes you can lose 5-1, and it's, you know, quite an even game. If you're conceding 35 shots against you, that's, you know, that could have been 8 or 9 nil, or 1, sorry. You know, so you know, for me, I don't know. I mean, Gemma Granger's got to be under a bit of pressure now, surely.
Yeah, I think she is. I think that's fair. I think any shouts for her head are a little bit premature. I also think we have to think about where the FAW are as an organization. People wanted Paige gone in the summer. And even if there was a lot of, you know, kind of substance to that argument, the FAW don't have the financial capability of doing that. And I don't see them getting rid of Gemma Granger anytime soon. I mean, like, the USA is sort of in the middle of trying to figure out who the heck is going to head up their women's national team. Like, the merry-go-round in terms of, that's not the right word, whatever it is, that thing that goes round and round and people decide which manager they're going to take off of it. There's not that many in the women's game. It's not like the men's. But yeah, with the women's, I'm also a little disappointed, because like the Nations League, I don't want to ever say that this was sort of a free-for-all or a free hit, but it did feel like this was sort of the preparation for the Euro qualifying campaign, and that this was going to be Wales's real chance to just sort of evolve and to learn and to get youngsters involved a little bit more. You go back to that France game, right? 18 months ago. So the starting 11 was Laura O'Sullivan. Then obviously you had Roberts, Ladd, Evans. Esther Morgan was at left back because Rachel Rowe was injured. Midfield of Angara James, Sophie Ingolf, Jessica Fishlock. And then Tash Harding was there, Carrie Jones and Kaylee Green. So you go to the Germany game on Friday. O'Sullivan's obviously not in goal anymore. Olivia Clark is there, which is really good to see. Roberts, Ladd, and Evans still there. You've got Lily Woodham, who's now at left back, and she's been really good being put into that role. Same midfield, James, Ingle, and Fishlock. And then this time it was Kerry Holland, again, Kaylee Green, and Hannah Kane. So there's not that many changes. And again, the subs was Fionn Morgan in the 86th minute and then Mary McAteer making her debut. So my question is, if Kaylee Green, who, by the way, plays in the championship now and she plays for Charlton, she's 35 years old, why isn't Gemma Granger looking at some of the youth coming in and thinking, okay, how about we try to like succession plan for the future? I mean, Jess Fischrock and Sophie Ingle, like they are going to get older at some point, and the Euros are going to come around, and it's going to be like the Aaron Ramsey and Gareth Bale and Joe Allen conundrum, where all of a sudden you're looking at players who cannot perform to their usual standard, but you need them to be on the pitch at the same time. You need people to be able to come in. And I really worry that Wales women aren't sort of planning for that day, and they're sort of leaving a huge gap in terms of what the youngsters or the next crop should be able to do and what they're actually going to be able to do because of the opportunities provided them.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because if we went and lost 5-1, but you're playing a lot of youngsters and you can see what you're trying to do, at least then you've got that to fall back on, it being the Nations League. It's a bit like Toshack's Wales. You know, we used to get battered a lot. You know, we weren't very good in games, but it was like, well, this is going to be valuable preparation for young lads like Gunter, like Ledley, like Ramsey, like Bale, you know, in future. And it ended up being like that. But when you're getting battered with a 35-year-old up front who probably shouldn't be playing, it's like, well, what are we achieving here? And I guess because football is the beast that it is, by standing still, you regress. And I think that's what's happened. I don't think we've got any worse. It's just we've stagnated, and I think football doesn't wait for anyone, does it? And I think we've just fallen behind a little bit. So something needs to change, and change sharpish if we want to have a chance of even getting close to qualifying in 2025. But Megan, what is that? You know, who are the players that we should be looking to, and who are the players that we should be starting to blood in that maybe aren't getting a chance?
Well, the starting 11 tonight has had to change because due to, I'm going to say, a lack of substitutions, two of the players that started on Friday are no longer in camp. They had to go back to their respective clubs to get assessed for injury. So that's Hannah Kane and Kerry Holland. So those are two really big losses for Wales, because Hannah Kane and Kerry Holland are just phenomenal players, and they're also really valuable players. Thankfully, Gemma Granger's decided to make a few subs. So Kerry Jones comes back in the starting 11. I have no idea why she didn't start. Gemma Granger argued that it was for tactical reasons. I can't think of a single good tactical reason not to have Kerry Jones starting in a match, but there you go. Fionn Morgan finally starts a match, which is super exciting. And Josie Green comes in, and Josie Green is also a really exciting sort of, I wouldn't call her a youngster, but she's just sort of been on the fringes, and now she's finally getting a chance. I think she's had like a few chances off the bench in the last couple of months, and that's really it. But I'm still really shocked by Elise Hughes not really being involved as much. So Elise Hughes plays in the championship, and she's leading the championship for goals scored. She's got 7 goals scored this season. She's got an assist. Last season, she was top of the championship table in terms of goals scored. Like, this girl scores goals, and it's phenomenal that she hasn't really been playing that often. So those are 4 names right there. Like, I want to see being used a little bit more. In terms of like the defense, I think they've got it down pat. Roberts, Woodham, Ladd, and Evans, that's great. Olivia Clark being in goal is awesome to see. She just made her Bristol City debut, or like WSL debut, against Arsenal over the weekend, and she put in a heck of a shift and then did it again with Wales. So like they're when she does trust the players to come in, a lot of them are showing the rewards for that. Like, they are proving that that is a valuable thing for her to do. It just seems really weird, like kind of her reticence to do so. But we'll see. Tonight's a really big night for the youngsters coming in. If they can just show a little bit of what they've got, then I think they can sort of make a really valuable case for themselves to stick with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, by the time you're hearing this, the game will have been played. If Wales turn it on and it's a big old victory, then maybe there'll be a voice note addition coming up next.
Or just a good defensive performance, like, not
that's
another
5-1.
That is, I mean, if they manage to do that, I think they can be really proud of themselves.
Yeah. On to some more positive stuff. And for a change, the positive stuff is our club sides playing in the EFL. And this weekend, for the first time since 1988, 4 Welsh sides won on the same day in the Football League. And also, I heard on Not the Top 20 podcast yesterday that it was the first time four Welsh clubs won and kept clean sheets since 1924. And those sides were Newport, who beat Northampton 1-0, Wrexham, who beat Grimsby 1-0, Swansea beat Merthyr 2-0 in the league. And Cowes, do you want to have a guess who the fourth team was?
Do you know what? I was hoping you were going to ask because
Yeah.
I think I know the answer,
Yeah.
and it may surprise me. But I'm going to go for Aberdare Town.
Correct. Aberdeen Athletic.
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
But
there you go.
they beat Reading 3-0, which was a lovely little stat to hear. Big shout out to Aberdeen Athletic, who were a massive team in the 20s, as far as
Yeah.
I'm aware. It's bizarre that so many Welsh clubs were playing in England at the time. But
Big shout out to Phil Stead and his Red Dragons
yeah.
book for that knowledge there. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. Absolutely. But yeah, this weekend, Cardiff beat Bristol City 2-0. They're up to fifth, which is really exciting from a Cardiff perspective. Swansea beat Blackburn 1-0 away, which is a really good result. Not an easy place to go. Newport beat Gillingham 2-0, thanks to an Omar Bogle goal that unfortunately was followed by a Gillingham fan giving him some racist abuse, which was just disgusting and just shameless, really, from the Gillingham fan. But obviously, he's been caught and banned, and hopefully will never go and watch a football game again. And of course, Wrexham won 2-0 away to Notts County, which is a massive win, Cowes. And it feels like since last time we spoke, Wrexham's season has really got going in the last few weeks. And we're even starting to see wins to nil, which hasn't been a common scenario in this season at all.
Yeah, it's been a weird old season. Sort of a lot of Wrexham fans. So any Wrexham fan you'll speak to sort of say we've probably only really played well in about three or four games, which is weird because we're in the top three. But yeah, no, brilliant result on Saturday. It was great performance. Never really looked like losing the game. Notts didn't really create anything. So yeah, really, really good away performance. Got another tough one this Saturday against Mansfield in the FA Cup. But no, things are heading in the right direction, and it was a bit of a makeshift sort of back line on Saturday as well, which was we were sort of fearing the worst before kickoff against the likes of Langstaff and McGoldrick. But no, Notts never looked like scoring, and it was a brilliant away day. It's probably makes it into my top 10 away days ever, I'd say.
Yeah, it feels like a real statement of intent now, up to third, level on points with Notts County. Obviously, Stockport seem to be really set in the pace. But obviously, this season isn't about winning the league for Wrexham. They can get away with being second or third. Is this it now for Wrexham? Are we just going to see, hopefully, that sort of form continue until between now and the end of the season? Obviously, a lot can happen, but it does feel like Wrexham have found their feet and, will continue in and around this area.
Yeah, I think so, mate. I've said it pretty much all along. I do think we're going to be up there. I don't think we'll win the league. I don't think we're quite that good. But then who knows? The good thing is we've got two quality players in every single position. So, at least two in every position, and that makes a massive difference. Sometimes when players bring fresh legs on, bring subs on, it weakens them because they've got their best 11 on the field, and then sometimes their bench isn't quite as strong. Well, our strength goes right down to number 23, 24 in the squad, so that's a massive plus for us. We've got a couple of injuries to defenders at the moment, but we've still got quality to come in. Got quality players who can't even get a game at the moment, can't even get a kick, even get into the squad. So yeah, I think things look good. But yeah, at the same time, it's a long season. We're still in October as we stand now, November tomorrow. But I'm really confident, right? Yeah, I think if you gave me £1,000 to put down, I'd put it on top three, definitely.
Oh, there's
Have
an
you got a
admin
thousand
man.
pounds? Have
No,
you got a
I
thousand
definitely
pounds for
don't
me
have
to
a
put down?
thousand pounds to give anyone, let alone myself. If only. Megan, obviously, good win for Swansea. Good win for Cardiff. Both sides, you know, finding their feet. I think it'll be a different season for both teams. Swansea, maybe not looking at the playoffs. Cardiff definitely are at this point. What are your sort of thoughts on both sides at the moment?
I mean, I'm impressed with Cardiff. I'll say that right now. I know, like, as a Swansea fan, I should probably just be, you know, loathing the air that Cardiff breathes at the moment. But I really have been impressed with them, especially with Aaron Ramsey not being on the pitch. I thought that that was going to be sort of this total dearth in creativity and they were really going to struggle, but that hasn't been the case. And I mean, Ruben Colwill's goal, I've watched that over about two or three times. Like, it is just genuinely jaw-dropping. It's gorgeous. And I don't know how that boy has not managed to get more minutes this season. I know he's had his injury problems, but I would love to just see him in a Wilshire. And, you know, if he's got to play for Cardiff, well, if he can get some more minutes, then great. I'm just happy Swansea have won. And I'm happy to see Liam Cullen on the score sheet too. Like, he's now got 2 goals and 2 assists from 14 championship matches. Last season, he only got only eight goals. He got 8 goals and an assist. But I do think that he'll sort of better that tally this season. And you know, he's a really good player. So it's nice to see him on the score sheet and Swansea winning. I have zero expectation of getting a point in the next 4 matches. Because Swansea play Sunderland, Ipswich, Hull, and Leeds, who are all in the top 10. So, like, if we get a point from any of those matches, solid. If we don't, I'm not going to lose sleep over it because I don't expect Swansea to get much out of that. But in terms of Cardiff, you know, kudos. I do think that they could. I don't know. I don't know what Cardiff are capable of. I still think Cardiff have like a mess up somewhere in them. But if they do sneak into the top six, then you know, like that's pretty impressive. And yeah, kudos to them.
Yeah, it's still a long season. The Championship is a basket case of a league, that has been said, and all the other cliches.
I was going to say, I bet Ryan absolutely loved asking a Swansea fan. I just want to make it hard this year. Yeah.
Oh, it is. I'm trying not to get too excited.
The guy who delivered my Tesco groceries yesterday, he saw that my partner was wearing an Everton shirt, and we just got onto the subject of football. And my partner was like, "Oh, 2 Derby wins in a row for you. How must that feel?" Because he was talking about like the Bristol City and the Swansea win. And the guy just went on this rant about how awesome it is to be a Cardiff fan. I had to like bite my tongue the whole time. Like, I couldn't say anything because I wanted this guy to give me my Tesco to delivery without like spitting on my apples. So like, I couldn't do anything. And he was the nicest old man I've ever seen. But I was like, God, can you shut up? You're insufferable. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. And I think if we are in and around the playoffs come January, then, you know, the embargo has been lifted. We haven't spent any money for a while. Then there may be a bit of cash to start splashing, which hasn't always resulted well for Cardiff in the past. But if Kiefer Moore comes along, which is the rumor that still persists, then who knows what could happen. But as most Cardiff fans know, and most fans of football who are aware of Cardiff know, it can all fall down very quickly. There's always something around the corner to derail Cardiff. So tentatively enjoying things at the moment. Errol Bullard seems to be the real deal, and it's just nice to have a proper manager, which feels like we haven't had for a long time. But yeah, in the Adron Premier this weekend, the headline is Rosie Hughes of Wrexham scoring her.
It's like she's going to score. It's like she's going to score. Urge to go to game.
Which is quite frankly,
to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game.
Urge
to go to game.
Urge
to go to game.
Urge
to go to game.
Urge
to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. Urge to go to game. game, urge to go to 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 games, then, you know, I think she's going to be more valuable doing that than maybe testing herself in another sort of challenging league. So no, she's been great. And Kara Jones got the brace. So Wrexham beat TNS. And like, I think what was the first North Wales derby for the Adrian Prem in, gosh, I don't know how long. So that's really exciting too. You know, North Wales didn't really have a North Wales team. Like, they didn't have one in the Adrian Prem, and now they do, and they got a derby win. So, you know, great job for Wrexham.
Yeah, very true. Wrexham have started probably better than everyone expected. I think they're definitely going to be big players in that league.
I was just going to chip in on Rosie Hughes there. I think, you know, the refreshing, well, it's I think it's fantastic. She's Megan will tell you the same. She's heard the interview. She's interviewed her herself. She's got this absolutely incredible self-belief. And like just the way she, you know, she talks about her game and her self-confidence and everything is absolutely amazing. And I just remember one bit where someone interviewing her said, "Oh, you know, you're the female Paul Mellon," and she goes, "No, Paul Mellon's the the male Rosie Hughes." So, you know, she's it's clear like she works really hard on her game, but she's got an unshakable belief in her own ability, which is great to see. And yeah, I love watching the highlights. I play veterans football on a Sunday, so I'm not able to get down to the games very often. But yeah, I always manage to watch the Scotia highlights. So yeah, really enjoying seeing Wrexham up there. And like Megan said, it's been a long time. I think it might be about 10 years, actually. I think Llan Didno were the last team to have a North Wales representative. You know, so it's been a long time coming. But yeah, fingers crossed Wrexham keep going well.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have an unbelievable self-confidence and self-belief if I scored 100 goals in 46 games. That is stupid. You know, imagine knowing that every time you step on the pitch, you're probably going to score 2 goals. That is mental, absolutely mental. But yeah, anything else from this weekend's action, Megan, in the Adra? The Adra, bloody, why did the FAW choose two such similar words every time?
So Grimsby Town.
So this one will be fun for you. Ryan Cardiff's at top of the table, still top of the table. They beat Barrytown United 6-1. They did it at Cardiff City Stadium, and they had 6 different goal scorers, which is just, you know, I think another flex for Ian Derbyshire in terms of, like, what his squad is capable of. I do think that they could potentially, like, defend their title with a lot of ease. But Swansea won 4-0 as well. So, you know, you can kind of see the league starting to sort of break off, but... it's sort of unfortunate for Pontypridd. They still haven't managed to get a point. So I think that they are, I don't want to say they're nailed on or anything because Barrytown have only got 3 points, but it's looking grim for Ponty.
Yeah, I think we need to keep an eye on Ponty's as a club. I think some weird goings on there over the last couple of weeks. We touched on it last week with the men's team's game against Cardiff Met in the MG Cup being cancelled. James Fishlock leaving. But I'm sure I saw the other day that they signed Nia Jones, ex-Wales international.
Yeah.
Which is incredible for the league and really good for Nia to put the boots back on.
Yeah. And if she can, you know, get them points and get them out of the relegation spot, then it'll be really exciting.
Absolutely. And before we move on, I should touch on the Cymru Premier as much as I'd like to not talk about it this week. But Friday night, Penmont lost 2-0 to Aberystwyth. It's a tough patch for Penmont. A lot of injuries and a lot of suspensions. And, you know, when you're in a league like we're in a semi-professional league, you know, if you have more than 5 or 6 injuries at a time, then, you know, you are already down to the bare bones. So, you know, Aberystwyth came, they could only beat what was in front of them, and they did it with aplomb, I think the word is. And it sounds like the Soul Crew had a great night out. So I think they deserve that after all the negative predictions I've given them over the last couple of seasons. So fair play to them. And it's really made the the bottom end of the table very interesting at the moment. They're now level on points with Colwyn Bay. Both are 4 points adrift now of Ponty and Barry, because Barry beat Colwyn Bay. Barry play ABBA this weekend, so plenty to fight for there. You know, all ABBA got to do is turn Barry over, and they're already back within a point of them. So, yeah, very interesting. It's not a done thing. It's not a, you know, it's not done and dusted as it may have looked a little bit earlier in the season. As we've said a million times, you can never write off ABBA. And it's a long way to go. So we'll keep an eye on that. But well done, ABBA. You deserved it this weekend. But the next time Pennebont play ABBA, I hope it's 10-0 to Pennebont, because we can't be having this.
just 2 points from me on that, right? Yeah, I think Aber, yeah, fantastic, great result for them. Still a long way to go for them to fulfil Gwill's prediction of winning the league.
Yeah, true.
but yeah, you know, that's a good start for them. But yeah, no, I think about the Bay as well. I mean, you know, suddenly they've been dragged into trouble. You know, one result can change the whole dynamic, can it? I mean, you know, say that was a real 6 points of that, and Barry have won the game, they'll be delighted. For me, though, I think, you know, all those clubs at the bottom, you know, as long as they're all sort of neck and neck, the real sort of acid test is after the split.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it? You know, and then when you're playing the lower sides week in, week out, that's when you really start to see who's falling away and who's climbing the table. So long, long way to go, mate. But it'd be good to see no one left adrift this year. Yeah. That's my hope. Obviously, as a GOG, I'd like to see the Bay sort of buck their ideas up a little bit. But you know, I've got a lot of time for Barry and Abbott as well. So yeah, it'd just be good to see a good battle down there, really.
Yeah.
Because, you know, fingers crossed, the Nomads can keep pushing TNS. But let's be honest about it. There's a chance that TNS might pull away. So you're probably looking down the bottom for entertainment value.
Yes, I agree. And I got to say, I think Barry are looking better every week at this point. Steve Jenkins seems to be starting to get his points across, I guess, you know, considering they changed manager so close to the season. So, yeah, I am a little bit concerned for Colwyn Bay, but I think Ponty are in free fall at the moment. There's always going to be a spot available for someone to survive. So, yeah, we will see. Right, that's the weekend wrapped up. Last week, Adrian Phillips promised to kidnap Rodri and take him to Spain. They've sent us a message, which you will hear now. Yeah, worrying times for anyone who hears it. Feel free to skip it, and we'll be back then for part two.
Afternoon, evening, and whatever followers, Phillips here in the toilet. On a train from Madrid to Valencia. Rodri got us tickets to a game on the weekend, but we went to watch Rayo Vallecano. None of those players want to play in the Church League. We asked for someone. He's subsequently been kidnapped, so I'm on the lookout for where he's gone. I think he's gone. They've sent me a message saying that he's in Valencia. I've got to go look for him. Again, this has turned into a disaster. Hopefully, if I can secure his release, he'll be back on the pod next week. Stay tuned to find out.
Welcome back to part two of Alternative Wales, the podcast. As always, we're going to kick things off with our lineup game. Kouse, you lose every week. Megan, the bar is low. The bar is low.
I've lost every time I've come on to here, and I've been flabbergasted by some of the lineups. So,
yeah. And it's not going to get much easier either today.
Oh, good.
I picked an obscure game with an obscure-ish lineup. Took me by surprise when I looked at it earlier. I've gone for Belarus 2, Wales 3 from the 5th of September 2021. Lockdown game, but an interesting game.
Gareth Bale hat-trick. Let's go.
Gareth Bale hat-trick. There's a spoiler
Gareth Bale failed my first Guys.
Megan, as our esteemed guest, I'm going to flick a plectrum. You can have sort of graphic side up, which is a little turtle. Dunlop, shout out, endorse me, and or the clear. What would you like?
The turtle, definitely, without a doubt.
It is the turtle. Would you like to go first or second?
First, because I've already sort of thrown out a name.
who are you going for first?
The hat trick hero, Gareth Bale.
Gareth Bale, tick. One in Megan's column. Kaus, who are you going for?
I've got to get off to a good start. I'm like, come on.
10 more players to pick from.
Yeah. Conor Roberts.
No.
What the how do you pick these games where the players that play literally every fucking game don't play?
I think Conor Roberts missed it because he was when he had that weird illness that no one knew about.
So no.
He picked the one game in the last 6 years that he missed. Yeah, yeah. Thanks,
so
Ryan.
That's 1-0 to Megan. Megan, what would you like to go for next?
Okay. I'm going to say Nico just because he always plays, but I'm wrong here. I'm wrong,
you're
aren't
wrong,
I?
Wrong, yeah. You're wrong. Oh, dear. This is fun. I like it when both of you are wrong. It's better than one person running away with it.
I always feel like we should start off with goalkeepers, but this was still the era where I genuinely struggled to remember what thing was going.
Always a guarantee, are they? I was going to go
for Danny Ward, but I'm not going to. I'm not touching the keepers because I really don't know. I think it was Ward, but I'm not going to go for it. I'm going to go for Kiefer Moore.
No.
You're fucking winding me up. What the fuck? These guys play every game, right? What the hell's going on?
Okay, that's 1-0 to Megan after two. Megan, your third go. If you get this right, you win.
It's annoying because I know who won the penalty for Bale, but I can't remember if that player came on as a sub. So I'm gonna go with Joe Morel. No, obviously Ethan Ampadu.
Duh. Oh my god, no! He'd gone for no!
I'm going to the wrong player.
Right, Kaus, who would you like to go for?
I'd like to go for Joe Morel, please.
Gosh darn it.
Right, it's 1-1 after three. It's now sudden death.
I'm going to go with Dan James, and I'm going to be wrong.
No, Dan James played, correct. Okay. Well done, Kaus. You've got to get
all
this
reliable.
Right.
Did you go for Ben Davis?
No one said Ben Davis.
I should have said Ben Davis in hindsight. Well,
no, judging, do you know what? Judging by this, I'd be better off going for fucking Kevin Ratcliffe than Ben Davis, probably. I'm going to go for Ben Davis. I'm just going to go for Ben Davis.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, Megan, back over to you.
Joe Allen.
Correct. Here we go. Kaus.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah,
that was
the Morel Allen midfield. That was
quite regular at the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was around the time Ampadu was having quite a few issues with his back, which is why he's not in the team.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I've just thought of someone that Dahl played. Okay.
Danny Ward, fuck it.
Correct, Kaus. Well done. Good gamble.
Yes.
Good gamble.
Do I get points for a substitute?
Not until we've done the full 11.
Okay. I'm going to go with Joe Roden.
No. No, Joe Roden.
Why is he not in there? Ah.
Right, Kaus, for a rare victory. A rare victory.
Do you know what?
There's not many left to pick from.
Yeah.
Oh. I think we're only down to five. We've got five left.
Yeah. I am going to go for Chris Meppham.
Correct. Well done.
Yeah.
Yes. Fair play. That was tense.
Do you know who I very nearly went for then?
Who
was James Lawrence?
Well, that would have been correct as well.
Would it? Fucking
that would have,
wow.
That was the same. That was the same window from the last time where James Lawrence played, wasn't it?
I think it might have been. Yeah. November. No.
Two.
Yeah. I think it might have been. I think. Yeah. You're right. So the team was Danny Ward in goal, Ben Davis left back, James Lawrence and Chris Meppham, centre-backs. Chris Gunter played right back in Connor Roberts' absence. Joe Allen and Morel were in midfield. And then there was three behind the striker of Bale, Brennan Johnson and Dan James. An early start for Brennan Johnson. And does anyone remember who played up front? It was a bit of a failed experiment.
Was it Harry Wilson? No, that was that was in the false nine.
I don't know.
He's been mentioned already on the podcast.
Oh, Reuben Colwell.
Reuben Colwell started up front, yeah.
Oh my God, of course he did. Mark Harris came on as a substitute and won the penalty for Bale.
Mark Harris was
fantastic in that game when he came on.
And Nico Williams also came on for Brennan Johnson. So, that was fun. I'm really glad I went for that one.
Why was Joe Roden not in that game? Was there...
He must have been injured, surely. I can't... He's not on the bench, so...
Was there something wrong with one of the players' passports? Or because there was an issue with some of the visas, because I remember I made a joke with Paige that I understood the visa situation probably better than most people.
Yeah.
But I can't remember if any of the players had visa problems. I don't think they... Or maybe they did. There's a reason why he's not in there. I don't think it's injury.
Well, that was fun. Kaus, well done, mate.
Dang.
Thank you.
That was it. I'm really glad I picked that one. I remembered it mainly because Colwell started, because he was on my mind this week, and I thought that is going to be a good one because that was a weird team.
That was a ridiculous team.
Yeah, weird team. Okay, let's do some questions, and we'll start with the question that seems to have caught the imagination of the listenership. It's Andrew Dowling who said, "What brand toothpaste would you say is your favourite? Because all three of you have wonderful smiles, so there's got to be some good backups keeping them clean and fresh for the cameras." Dowling, Fiverr's in the post. But Ben Price of View from the Ninian fame has replied saying, "I'm having a guess at these." He says, "Kaus is Colgate whitening, Ryan Colgate with crystals, and Megan is an oral B for sensitive teeth kind of person." Megan, he's got you there, isn't he? Banged
to rights. It's really terrifying, actually. Like, I as soon as I saw this, I had shivers go down my spine. I didn't know if maybe like someone had seen the inside of my bathroom. Like, I've just now bought an oral B sensitive brush toothbrush about like 2 months ago. Like, I'm a recent convert. So it's really terrifying that someone has figured this out. But then I also started to wonder, like, is there a whole sort of like language dedicated to dentistry that also somehow is reflective of people's personalities that I've totally missed since moving to the UK? Like, is there a vernacular around this that has just totally evaded me?
Yeah, it does beg the question, is Ben Price hiding in Megan's bathroom? I hopefully doubt it, because Ben seems to be a nice guy. Kaus, I think he also got you right.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I do go for the Colgate whitening. Sometimes I just brush my teeth with Madry. but either way, you know, I'm fine with either. No, I do go for the old whitening. Yeah, Colgate. So I have been known, though, Rye, in the past, to go for a bit of Aquafresh.
Okay.
I used to be fascinated when I was a kid how it used to come out the tube with the three colours, like a Neapolitan ice cream. I used to enjoy that.
Yeah. He's got me right on the brand. I don't use Colgate with crystals, but I just use Colgate. To be honest, I just use whatever's cheapest in the shop, which is usually like a Colgate. I think it's Colgate Total I've got in the bathroom. I literally went and checked earlier when he said. Ben, particularly scary that. Maybe that's his talent. His hidden talent is looking at someone and knowing what their toothpaste of choice is.
Very, very unnerving, I would say.
It is unnerving, Megan will never go in her bathroom again now without sort of checking her shoulder.
going around the door and looking behind it, just double checking everything.
Paul Burns says, it's a food question, a rare food question. He says, "You're having beef stew for dinner. Simple question is, dumplings or no dumplings?" He said, "Me and my wife think they are are an essential part of the stew. Our three kids hate them." I'm a big dumplings fan. Don't really have them, but when I've had them, very nice.
Yeah. Kelsey,
dumplings?
Yeah, either way, I'm fine. I'm not a massive stew man, I have to be honest. No, not really, no. I don't mind it. I'll have it if it's there, but I'd never make it. I mean I'd never make any food myself. But yeah, I, uh, Yeah, dumplings though, they're all right, aren't they? Yeah, I don't mind them.
Megan, what are your thoughts on the great stew and dumpling debate?
I have to echo Kaos here. Like, I don't go out of my way to pursue stew. Like, that's not my dinner
This
of
stew,
choice.
I don't know.
Yeah, but if someone did put stew in front of me, I think I'd get more excited if there was a dumpling in it. But I also think that there's just something exciting about seeing like a little dumpling in your thing. It's like, ooh, what could this be? And there's just sort of there's a thrill about that.
Yeah. I think I echo your statements. I don't know why we've spent so long talking about beef stew, but there we are. Name you another podcast that talks about Rosie Hughes's goal scoring ability and beef stew and toothpaste. Yeah. There we are. It's a beautiful thing. Ben Bryce with his actual question. Good question, this. Looking forward to sort of hearing the responses. He said, vloggers at the football. It's controversial and traditionalists hate them. But should the FAW and clubs themselves be looking to bring people like Away Days or Smith to games to give the clubs and league some much-needed publicity? He doesn't want to say it, but not Thogden. Never Thogden. And I do echo those statements because that Thogden guy makes my skin crawl. Megan, obviously, as a sort of a fairly recent convert to football, and you aren't really tied to the cynical traditionalist view of the game that most of us are, which I think brings a nice bit of freshness to your content. What are your feelings on vloggers at the football? It's a recent phenomenon, and we're probably not the target audience for them, but yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this is probably a better question for someone who understands how TikTok works. Like, when Vine died, I gave up on all video related enterprises. So that was sort of the end for me. I don't have, if someone next to me is vlogging, go on with, like, get on with it. I don't care. What I find infuriating is when Gareth Bale's lining up his free kick. It's one of the biggest goals of the year, if not like Wales's entire life. And there's someone who thinks that videotaping themselves is more important than like, if you're going to videotape him. Videotape like the actual moment. Like, why does your reaction matter? Like, I don't know. It just feels so self-aggrandizing and big-headed to be like, oh, my reaction's going to be awesome and I can't wait for all the views and the viral. Maybe that's me being a cynic, but that's what really makes me mad is like, I don't care if you... And like, also a lot of it's put on for show. I've totally 100% celebrated a goal like a mad woman, but I watch some of the vlogs and I think, like, was that necessary? Like, I don't know. It's like a level of pantomime that goes into it that I just don't really like. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's negative. So,
yeah, I think that's very fair. Kaos, I think you've probably had to do a bit of this yourself. In recent times, you know, as someone who is probably a bit more of a traditionalist with football, you know, you've been going a long time to the football. You know, you have got, you know, a decent few more years on me, just to sort of remind you. Look, it is sort of modern football and some people will dislike it, but yeah, what are your feelings on it?
Right. Here we go. Get comfortable. Right. Now, this is a tricky one for me because I agree with everything Megan just said. Everything completely. I am a traditionalist. You know, I hate a lot of aspects of modern football. I'm starting to do some work for an American sort of firm, and some of it will include that sort of thing. So I've got to be very careful what I say about it. But I completely agree. You know, I'm lucky. You know, I'm lucky enough to do the job I do and stuff, and you know, doing bits and bobs for an American podcast and stuff now. But you will never be if you're just going to the game and it's a bit of a hobby. You know, et cetera, et cetera. For me, you cannot beat living in the moment. You can't beat putting your phone down, live in the moment, enjoy it. I would never have enjoyed, for example, I mean, the big one that always pops into my mind is Hal Robson Cano in 2016, plus Sam Vokes in Lille. I could never have enjoyed that to the extent that I did had I been filming and been focusing on what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. It's it's that moment of joy where you just have like an out of body experience, and you just let yourself just absolutely immerse yourself in that moment. You cannot beat that. But I always say as well, you do you, whatever you know, whatever works for you, fantastic. As long as you're not pissing anyone else off, which I'll be honest with you, I see some of these vloggers and I think to myself, if I was sitting next to him at a game, I'd have to tell him to piss off.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of them, you know, it's a tricky one. You do whatever works for you. As long as you're not upsetting anyone else, you enjoy yourself and do whatever. But yeah, Megan, I completely agree with everything you said. But yeah, I'm a bit of a hypocrite as well. So there's where I stand on it.
Yeah, morals until there's cash involved. We've all been there.
You know me, mate. You know me.
I think I echo your statements. I think I have a couple of different views on it. I don't like club vloggers, people who watch their club and vlog their club, because I think it just sets you up to look like a berk. But I do also take great joy in watching opposition fans at games that my club wins. So, you know, when Swansea lost to Cardiff earlier this season, I watched a couple of Swansea ones because it was really funny. And I think that's sort of what it's... I don't think you'd watch your own club's one because you know the match day experience.
Isn't that kind of like an extension of like going into an opposition fan's like fan group page or something and seeing all of them moan? Like, I feel like that's sort of the modern day extension of that.
Exactly. So there is that element of it. But I do like the idea of people going to Welsh, you know, grounds and stuff. And I think it's good because that is what kids watch these days. And I think sometimes we've got to remember as we are getting older, you know, and we're all in a different generation and our content habits are different. And I don't want to get too sort of media speak in it, but Gen Z very much is into that sort of thing. And that's how they take their content. And I think there are some good people out there. I think Ben mentioned Away Days. I haven't really watched much of it again because it's not the thing, but like it's tasteful. And I think it does wonders for clubs. And I think as long as it's not too over the top and too pantomime-y and too sort of all about me, if you do it in a way to sort of sell an experience in a club, I think it's quite a good format. So that's my view, and I'm going to sit on the fence a bit. But yeah, I also agree. I'd rather not sit next to someone in a ground who's filming themselves the whole time.
Neutral Switzerland. Nice job, Ryan.
Exactly. Lewis Mitchell has said, any last ditch bid for Llandovery 2034 to save us from the Saudis? If only. But Rodri hopefully will be back next week if Phillips lets him go to discuss maybe bidding for the 2034 World Cup, because it does look like, unfortunately, the Saudis are going to get their way and get the World Cup, which is just disgusting and frightening. And I hate it. I hate it so much. And talking about hating things so much, Boosh's question. Sorry, Boosh. that was very harsh. I love your questions, Boosh. Sorry. It just, you know, it's the ball sat up nicely for me and I had to volley it home then. But there we are. I'm sure you can forgive me. Right. This is actually a return to form for Boosh, question-wise, after some of the last stinkers he's had. Anyway, welcome to my nightmare. I think you're going to like it. I think you're going to feel you belong. Rocked Alice Cooper in a devilish way. It's Halloween. What's the spookiest / scariest ground you have visited? For me, St. Andrews, Birmingham, back in the late 80s. Glad to get away in one piece. Megan, I'd be intrigued just to see what you think about this. You know, as someone who is, again, new to football and new to fan culture and the away experience, is there any grounds that have particularly frightened you you've been following football?
Yeah, so this wasn't necessarily an away experience, but because I didn't really associate with either side, it felt like an away, like a double away experience. But I went to Carnarvon Town's game about a year ago at the Oval, and it was around Christmas time, and I have genuinely never been more terrified of anything in my entire life. Like, it had been a really abnormally sunny day in December, and so it was kind of warm. Everyone had been on the piss. Like, the smell of alcohol was genuinely insane. And so, like, we're sort of on these sort of like the we're at like the greats watching the game and everything. And you can just kind of feel the energy in the air is like getting increasingly more sort of volatile and violent, and everyone's like yelling at the keeper like these really horrible things. I've got this little 7-year-old next to me who's like, what does that word mean? I'm like, I don't know. And like, because I don't want him to ever know what that word means. But it got to a point where I think Carnarvon Town got like a late goal, and just like the surge of male bodies that like crushed me into the pole that I was sort of standing in front of, I thought I was gonna die. I genuinely felt like I broke my arm. So I think that was probably the most terrified I've ever been at a football ground, was that. But it was fun. Like, I've got nothing against the Carnarvon fans. Like, it was interesting, and it was an experience, and I just feel like I was really ill prepared for what I was gonna sort of take in. But it was a good game of football.
Yeah, that is a good pick. I've also feared for my life in the Oval in the past.
Yeah, when I tell people that story, and I found out other people have these sort of weird premonitions going in there as well, I'm like, I wasn't the only one. Like, this wasn't just like a small American girl feeling. Like, this is ubiquitous across a lot of people.
Kaus, I'll be intrigued to know your answer.
Yeah, in terms of being scared, I can genuinely say I've never really felt sort of scared as an adult. But when I was a kid, I went to watch a Bangor Rill game at Farrer Road back in, it would have been probably mid to late 90s, I think. I'd have been about 11. And yeah, people were just throwing rocks at each other. And I was just petrified, to be honest. It was absolutely ridiculous. That was pretty scary. Yeah, in terms of like intimidating atmospheres, intimidating sort of grounds, went to the last ever game at the Vetch watching Wrexham, and the sort of away end for that game to fit as many Swansea fans in the ground as they could. I think it was an FAW Premier Cup final. I think there was probably only about 400 Wrexham there. So they put the away end in half. So they just put some netting separating the two. Netting, what the hell is that going to do? When Swansea scored, it was absolute bedlam. They just went absolutely nuts. And that was quite intimidating, to be honest. And there was like 11,000 packed into the Vetch. Probably had a safety certificate for about 6,000, I'd imagine. That was pretty good. Another one is Chester away. I remember probably 2007-ish. Couldn't get a ticket for the away end because Wrexham sold the away allocation. So I got a ticket in the home end, me and a couple of lads.
True, that would go down really bad.
It just went off, and people fighting all over the place, and that was pretty mad. I think the less said about that, the better. Yeah. They're mine, I think. Yeah, but yeah, I think certainly when I was growing up, some Cymru Prem grounds were pretty intimidating. Farrer Road's definitely one. The Oval's another. Bellevue on its day could be intimidating as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's funny. It feels like the Cymru Prem sort of went through, in the 90s. I remember watching having some really big crowds in these grounds, and before the days of stringent sort of safety certificates. So yeah, they were pretty hairy days in the 90s in the Cymru Prem.
Yeah, tough one this, because growing up going to Ninian Park regularly in the early 2000s, I feel like I sort of got desensitized to sort of mass violence, I guess. Because I was always near it, a safe distance away. But I don't think I've ever really truly been to a ground where I really feared for my safety. A couple of the Eastern European ones, when we went to Serbia, we drew 1-1, the Ramsey Penenka. What would that have been? 2017. That was a little, because it was a lot of talk for the game of sort of the safety aspects of it, because it was in I think they call it the Maracanã, the is it Red Stars ground? Anyway, you know the one. It's the one that's on all those videos of the tunnel and all that sort of thing. But I never really feared for myself at that point, because we were bussed in and sort of bussed out, and that tends to be the case, same with when Cardiff play Swansea, that sort of thing. But after we'd scored, I think the Serbian fans were sort of launching some missiles into the Wales end, some sort of flag poles and stuff that looked like spears and firecrackers and stuff. But no one really got hurt. So, yeah, thankfully, I've grown up in a time where football violence has very much been on the periphery. I never had to go to games, and feared. If you wanted to get involved in stuff, you could go and find it. But I've never had to, fight my way out of a situation or anything like that. So long may that continue. Right. Good question, Boosh. Fair play. A return to form. So yeah, that's it from us this week. Megan, do you have any closing statements? Anything people should be checking out?
Not really. Life's just kind of trucking along. So I got nothing more to offer other than what I put forth this evening.
There we are.
Any particular toothpaste you'd like people to go out and buy, Megan? Or
no, because now people are gonna like know what else I've got in my bathroom, and that's personal, and like that makes me feel vulnerable. I don't want people to know these things.
Yeah, if Ben Price can let us know what deodorant Megan uses, that would be really handy.
If he gets that, I'm officially like I'm leaving the country. I'm out.
Kaus, anything from you?
Yeah, just start picking some normal games for these, these Wales lineups. I think that's three in a row now where I've guessed Connor Roberts during the time he's been playing, and he hasn't played in any of them. The only three.
Yeah.
You're stitching me up with this, mate. So yeah, come on, sort it out, right?
Yeah, I enjoyed myself. If that's any consolation, to play us out this week, I've chosen "I Paint Dogs" by Melon Melon. I saw them last week in the garage in London. They were absolutely brilliant and really impressed that, you know, a band from Wales sold out a room in London. I think it was about 400 or 500 caps. So really impressive. They were fantastic, really entertaining. And the lead singer said that he picked up a guitar when he was 31. And it was the best thing he's ever done, which is really good. And a big, you know, nice to see that, you know, you can be that age and still make it. So to speak. So there's hope for us all yet. But yeah, thank you very much, Megan. Thank you very much, Kaus. We'll be back next week as the days tick down towards Armenia and Turkey. I'm very excited. I can't wait. Diolch yn fawr once again, and speak to you then.
I'm sorry, but there's no place for you here to understand. So here's a plan. I've been thought.